Well, about this time every year, we check in with our friends at ARI of Connecticut. This organization down in Fairfield County is enriching the lives of people with disabilities and their families by enabling them to achieve their fullest potential at home, at work, and in the community. And we're also pleased to be welcoming a representative of the Stamford Police Department. That organization works very closely with ARI of Connecticut to provide support and as well as important training to their officers about dealing with folks in the community who may be alternately abled, neurodivergent, or have some other types of mental or physical disabilities. So we're very much looking forward to hearing about that initiative. But in the meantime, Suzanne Kuligowski is back with us representing ARI. Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us again. And we've got a trifecta of events coming up over the next few months, starting with this, 19th annual Walk for Independence coming up soon?
Yes. Thank you very much, John, for welcoming me here. We do have our 19th annual Walk for Independence that's coming up on Saturday, April 26th, and we are very much looking forward to honoring the Stamford Police Department and the Stamford Police Association at this event.
So for folks who may be from other areas of the state or even over in Long Island or Westchester County that are listening to our interview or checking in on the podcast, give us a little bit more background and flavor of exactly who ARI is and what you guys do.
ARI is a nonprofit based solely in Stamford, Connecticut. We provide services for adults with developmental disabilities and lots of other secondary disabilities, whether that be physical or mental health or behavioral challenges. We have been around since 1952 and have held really true to our founder's mission of supporting the Stamford area. So we've really maintained our intentional small local presence here in Stamford. We have four group homes, an adult day program, and we support people to live independently in the community and also to work for lots of employers in the Stamford community.
Mm. And your bandwidth and a purposeful mission really kind of encapsulates, about 200 folks at any given time?
Yeah, throughout the year, we serve about 100 people at any given time. And so, some people come and go throughout the year. So it could, be well beyond that.
Right. And unlike the police department, you're not a Stamford municipal agency. You're an independent nonprofit. And while your focus is in Stamford, some of your friends, clients, and supporters are from adjacent communities.
Yes, absolutely. We serve people who live in surrounding communities. We also, of course, have employees who come from lots of areas outside of Stamford in Connecticut, as well as Westchester County and into the Bronx.
Great. Well, the first event that's coming up, obviously, is this Walk for Independence. We talk about it with you guys every year. You've also got a golf tournament and a gala coming up in the summer and fall. So we'll touch base and introduce our listeners to those to have them save the date if they're interested in supporting you. But are we still early enough in the process as we play this here on the 16th of March for sponsorships or underwriting, as well as folks to sign up to participate in the Walk for Independence?
Yes, absolutely. All of the information can be found on our website at aricct.org. And we are definitely still welcoming sponsors and donors and walkers. It's a really fabulous, fun event on Saturday, April 26th.
And obviously, you're not the first person since the beginning of the year to come on our program and, articulate concerns about the future funding. You lean on a number of different systems to help underwrite the programs that you deliver. And even though you're a small, relatively boutique nonprofit with a relatively narrow scope of focus, as you said, 100 plus people at any given time you're taking care of, the need to have an even greater kind of buffer or hedge against what may be coming down on agencies like yours is critically important. So now more than ever, you really need the Stamford, greater Stamford area to step up, businesses, individuals, to not just maybe bring folks out to the walk on the day of, but get involved ahead of time by sponsoring.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. What is going on at the federal level with regard to potential cuts in Social Security and Medicaid is deeply concerning to us. So support is absolutely critical at this time. Our funding comes from, the majority of our funding comes from the state of Connecticut Department of Developmental Disabilities, and Medicaid funds make up about 82% of our income. So it is a very deep concern for us at this time. But we are remaining very positive and hopeful and continuing to work on great things and very much appreciate all of the support of sponsors and donors for the walk as well as the golf tournament and the fall ball.
Sure. So folks can kind of make a mental note of those dates. Can you just run them down for us and just give us a kind of a quick encapsulation of what attendees and participants will hope to experience when they join ARI for either this walk, the golf tournament, or the fall gala?
Yes, the walk starts at 10 a.m. and it goes until about 1 o'clock. We have some presentations, obviously recognizing our honorees and some elected officials that will be there. We serve breakfast and we serve lunch and we have clowns and lots of fun activities before the walk kicks off.
Great. And the date and location?
That is April 26th at Cove Island Park in Stamford.
Okay, great. Now, how about the golf tournament? That's a big draw. You usually bump up against or even oversell on that, don't you?
Yes, we do. The golf tournament this year is on Thursday, June 12th. We'll be honoring Jack and Sharon Ferry, two really amazing members of our community. And that golf tournament did sell out last year, and we anticipate the same this year. So we are already reaching out and filling foursomes at this time.
And of course, while it seems light years away, autumn 2025 for those who are planning big fundraisers and large events is already looming.
Yes, the fall ball is on Friday, October 17th at the Italian Center in Stamford, also a very popular event. And yes, plans are underway. It comes quicker than sometimes we like. Not enough time to get all the planning done, but it's a very fun event.
And of course, direct donations can always be made to ARI for folks who may not be able to participate or who may live elsewhere who understand the importance of this organization and want to lend a hand or make a donation, right?
That is correct. Again, our website is aricct.org, and all of the information about our organization and how to donate is there.
Very good. Well, we know that you're honoring the Stamford Police Department and its related foundation at this upcoming Walk for Independence, but they are also honoring the folks from the ARI community as well as all of Stamford and individuals who may work there or pass through there as commuters or visitors through the training and expertise that they apply to interacting with folks like the ones from your community who may be disabled or neurodivergent. So we're going to eclipse our chat this morning in order for you to give the rest of your time to the Stamford Police Department. So we're going to pick up on that call. But in the meantime, Suzanne Kuligowski, we thank you and your work as always with ARI. Say hello to Gerald for us. And folks, if you want to learn more about this organization or register or participate or sponsor any of the events we've already talked about, just go to aricct.org. So as promised, we are on the line now with Lieutenant Douglas Disso of the Stamford Police Department. As we chatted a couple moments before we turned on the microphone, law enforcement agencies all over the country, and in fact, probably around the world for the most part, are adopting cutting edge 21st century tactics and practices to ensure that encounters with individuals in their communities go as safe and smoothly and efficiently as possible. The Stamford Police Department is no different. They have adopted a training protocol, if you will, for all of their officers and staff in the event they have to encounter individuals on the spectrum with other neurodivergent issues that are alternately abled or experiencing mental health emergencies. Lieutenant Disso, thank you so much for being part of the program.
Yeah, John, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you on this subject. It's an honor and a privilege to get some, to be able to discuss this with you. And the fact that ARI is acknowledging the police department and the work that we do with them is pretty awesome. I know they've been around since the 1950s, and run a great program for our community.
You guys are also big proponents of the Special Olympics torch run, so your interaction with these populations is a combination of business and pleasure, which is fantastic. So in view of the fact that we've just got about 10 minutes with you, give us a little bit of education on how today's Stamford Police Department training protocols are helping your officers and staff members better understand and respond to individuals that may be among those populations we talked about a few moments ago.
Yeah. So, John, so the Stamford Police Department, just to give you a little bit of history, we traditionally, went to a post training academy, which is up in Meriden, where we sent our recruits to go up there for training. And that was because just the lack of resources in the city to have our own training academy. Mm-hmm. I've been on the job for about 20 years. And when I went to the academy, I went in Stamford, and it was a little different. You got to learn the community, the culture of the department, the culture of the city. It was a little bit better. And we drew away from that by sending our recruits up to Meriden. When Chief Shaw came in as our new chief, he felt that was one thing that he wanted to bring back to the agency. So now we have our own academy, which is, like I said, we brought back those values of learning the culture and the community and dealing with the individuals that were in the agency. Mm. So with that, we're able to incorporate, training and awareness on the subject of dealing with individuals with disabilities. So, part of the awareness is, we have to understand the different types of disabilities, whether it be physical, sensory, intellectual, developmental, or psychiatric issues. So that's one thing based upon awareness. We have a newly formed behavioral health unit that is highly resource-driven to deal with individuals that need the follow-up or the initial contact. We have a lot of our officers have become crisis intervention training, and I know that sounds like it's kind of evasive. Mm. It's not. It's just, like I said, it's the awareness to bring the officers and how to deal with certain strategies and, as simple as using clear and simple language instead of jargon.
Sure.
Having a lot of patience with individuals, allowing extra times with response. So we're trying to better equip our first line officers when they interact with individuals such as these, that we do it the right way.
Mm-hmm. By the same token, it's important, I think, to hear from you some advice to the general public, no matter where they are, because God bless them, you are not always the first interveners. Of course, you have your emergency dispatchers and telecommunicators who are maybe the first person to either take the call or take a call from someone who is interacting with an individual who's having a crisis. For folks who encounter somebody who may be on the autism spectrum or have some sort of a disability or maybe having a mental health crisis, what are the most important couple of things that those callers need to say when they dial 911 and connect with the dispatchers so that they can go to work on your behalf and your officer's behalf to make sure that initial personal encounter and interface goes as good as it can?
Yeah, so that is a great question. And to be honest with you, like we have utilized the collaborative approach to crime suppression, but it's also the collaborative approach to incidents such as these. So that is a great question. The dispatchers will ask whoever calls in specific questions geared toward, you know, like where you are, what's the situation, what exactly where they are in the city, because there we have gotten calls about individuals with disabilities, and we have we had an instance where we had an individual that used to love walking on High Ridge Road, and he used to love walking, and that was his thing, and the dispatch center would get calls on him, and we would go out and check on him and make sure that he was safe and stuff like that. So those are, you know, like a lot of the questions that'll be asked by the dispatchers, they're trained to ask specific questions on what they're looking at, what the individual sees, where they are, how could we best get to them in a timely manner to provide them services if they need it.
So I guess the most important thing for people to know is that if they call, it's not just, I need help, send somebody. They're going to best help the situation by calmly responding to all of the questions that the dispatchers are asking, because at that very same time, officers are moving toward them.
Exactly. And John, just to be specific too, we have also looked at our response in terms of police. A lot of times these incidents, and we've worked very, very, we've had a lot of training and working, collaborating with, you know, Stanford EMS. A lot of these calls are not police-driven calls. Mm-hmm. They can require good services from EMS and fire to assist, because a lot of times what we found is that sometimes when police show up, individuals think that they're in trouble, and they're really not in trouble. Mm-hmm. It's just that we're there to provide help. So we have also changed our response in a lot of these situations to accommodate the situation as best we can with the least amount of intrusiveness on the individual.
Yeah. A lot of times these callers are probably very upset or nervous. Maybe they've witnessed an individual who's, using a walker or a wheelchair. They've fallen out of it, or they've tripped or had some kind of, they're having some kind of an episode. So it is important, once again, I guess, to reinforce that people can best serve the victim by making sure that they're as clearly answering all the dispatcher's questions so that they get the right help. It may not be a police matter. It may be something that's more suited for EMS and those professionals.
Yeah, sure. When those calls come in, John, just to enlighten the public, what happens is that the dispatchers have a system where they have a checklist of questions, mm-hmm, based upon the information that they're receiving from the public.
Yeah, like a script,
if
you will.
And then they'll be peppered with a bunch of questions to best suit the response.
Very good.
So, like I said, you know, we really, myself, and I was part of this, and that's why I'm so happy that I get the opportunity to speak to you. I was part of changing the response with Chief Shaw's backing to individuals in cases like this, because we found that look, why don't we throw the best resources right away at it and not exacerbate the situation, mm-hmm, when we don't have to.
Very good.
So we've gotten like really good at, mining these types of responses. And we've educated our staff with how the best to deal with these things. So if they hear something that goes out, hey, why don't we let the EMS or the fire go in first, let them assess it. And if they need our help, and if it gets to be a little bit where they feel that they're not unsafe, then we'll step in.
Very good.
But we've tailored our response a lot better. And that's one thing I'm very, very proud of this agency, because it's something that even with the behavioral health unit, I mean, the resources that we provide our community is unbelievable. We really are. And I say, I love to say this, that we're in essence, the flagship to a lot of these responses, and agencies have followed our lead in these type of things.
Well, we're so proud to be able to give you an opportunity to talk about it, and so proud to know that you guys are great partners with our friends at ARI of Connecticut, assisting them and being honored by them at their 19th annual Walk for Independence coming up. We hope people will go to their website, ARICT.org, and register for that, or their upcoming golf tournament, or their fall gala. You will be seeing Stamford police officers and staff at all those events, who are both supporters and honorees. So Lieutenant Doug Disso of the Stamford Police Department, thank you, and please extend our best wishes to your entire team over there, on behalf of us here at Connoisseur Media. Thank you for your work, and stay safe.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.